Okay, would you like to first say your name, where you were born, and what year you were born, day and year?
All right, I'll start it. Ruth George. I was born in the Dalles, Oregon, on July 21st, 1928. And what about you?
Alfred George, middle initial Harry, born in November 5th, 1923, at Spokane, Washington. I can't remember the hospital.
That's a good one. The first question I have is, what is your first memory of Alaska?
Well, before that, who are you?
Oh, I'm Colleen Herning. Born in Fairbanks, Alaska, at St. Joseph's Hospital.
First memory of Alaska. Oh, well, I guess, speaking for myself, probably the first impression. That what you're thinking of, sort of impression?
Well, when you think about back to when you first got here, what was the very first thing that happened?
I suppose it would have been the daylight, because it was August when the kids and I arrived.
Of what year?
1956.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it didn't get dark at all, and we weren't used to that. Now, Al might have a different impression.
Well, when I woke up to the fact that we were going to Alaska, I got looking at various books. The one that I remember most was the National Geographic and the statement by the president of the university that they never had any thunder and lightning in the interior in Fairbanks. And we woke up to the fact that Dr. Patty didn't really know what he was talking about. We had lots of
Was he president of the University of Alaska at that
right.
time? Oh, okay. And
the other thing that I noted about this was the fact that you look at the amount of rain that the interior of Alaska gets, and it's about 11 and a half inches. And with 11 and a half inches in Oregon, which was where we were coming from, the volume of water was 11 and a half inches also. Only 11 and a half inches in Oregon was high desert. They had sagebrush, things like this. And I was trying to rationalize, how can we have all these trees all the way up from the Canadian border, trees, and it's 11 and a half inches.
Pretty amazing. Huh?
And so I was puzzling my way north.
Well, how did you get here? How did you first get here?
I drove.
From where?
Oh.
Portland.
Living in Portland?
When did we quit working for the Forest Service?
Oh, I don't remember, a few weeks before you left, but we had moved everything that we were moving out of our house into, and not bringing up here, into Al's folks' basement. Took them years to get rid of it.
In Portland?
In Portland, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's where you actually left from, but from there you went to Spokane, and why?
Were you together?
No.
Oh, okay.
Noel went on to Spokane with a new station wagon and pulling a good-sized trailer. Oh, and he had the dog with him.
Which dog?
Oh, this was a dog that, a pound puppy that we'd had for a couple of years, a part lab, black lab, who got car sick.
Not good.
And I really found that the reason it was car sick was my uncle, who insisted that he has to help me drive up the highway.
Couldn't go by himself.
And
which uncle is that?
This is Uncle Lewis, my mother's sister's husband. And what he had been doing all the way up the highway was feeding the dog canned fish dog food, which was giving the dog diarrhea.
Oh no!
And when it wasn't diarrhea, it was vomiting. And we way to Alaska before I got this puzzle untangled and convinced him, don't feed that dog any more fish.
Oh, man. So you, how long did it take you to drive up from Portland?
4 days?
Four or five days, I guess.
And how did you get up here, Bruce?
Well, we waited until Al found the house to rent.
Oh, then, so he went ahead of
you. Yeah, and then we flew up about, it was a month later, I think, before we came up. Three kids and a cat.
Oh, she's got to be my next question.
And that was Pan Am, and that was before jets were flying up here.
Mm-hmm. You were the prop.
Yeah, so as I remember, it was 6 hours out of Seattle. But it was direct to Fairbanks. You didn't have to go to Anchorage.
Had you ever flown before?
Just a little, let's see, coming back from Missoula, where my folks were, we had flown to Spokane and then on to Portland. We went over there to visit before we headed north. So that was the first time.
And
pretty exciting.
Yes, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember about the flight?
Not a lot. I suppose I had my hands full of kids and I wasn't time to think about it, because I don't really remember much. I remember landing in Spokane and Al's aunt and uncle coming out to, you know, kind of wave at us. I don't think we even got off the plane or more than
And then just kept on going to
Well, no, we kept on going on down to Portland.
Oh,
that's where our tickets were. Oh, yeah, that was another big excitement. Al had arranged the tickets from up here. Only nobody in the Pan Am office in Portland knew anything about it.
Uh-oh.
So his dad was on the phone threatening all sorts of dire things till he got that straightened out.
Well, where did you first rent when you got here?
Marianne McCall, was that her name?
Yeah, the husband was a geologist who had McCall Glacier was named after him.
Oh.
He was a he was the one that led the rescue effort to some of the climbers that were back off and try it again. There was a 4 or 5 man climbing team from the university that got involved in an accident on the mountain, and one of the members of the party received a broken leg. And they didn't have the equipment to rescue anybody, and so they pitched a tent and left most of the food with him, etc., and they took off for base camp, and I guess they came, oh, they must have come all the way into town, and McCall, who was a instructor in geology and quite an accomplished mountain climber, he led the party. In the process of this, he stressed himself physically, and he came down with pneumonia. And but he got the crew up to the guy who sat in this tent for 7 days, hoping that maybe somebody would come rescue him, and led the rescue party back to civilization.
But he, McCall himself, died as a result of this pneumonia or something,
yeah.
And then you rented the house after he died?
From his widow, yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
She was a native gal out of Nenana.
And where was this house?
Well, that house was where Hotlix is located now, on the corner of College Road and Hess.
Is it in that little building? Was it?
No,
that little building.
The house is gone.
Oh, corner of John.
Mm-hmm. Oh. That was our garden area. It had a nice big fenced yard. And
that's where Hotlix is? Was the garden area?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The house sat back from the road. Well, back from both streets, actually, kind of on the back corner.
Well, Al, did you have a job lined up with the university?
Yeah.
So you got that job before you came?
I was the headquarters assistant and chief flunky for the Bear Springs Ranger Station on the Mount Hood National Forest in Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And this guy drove in our office compound area at Bear Springs and family was.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something to the fact that this is what you're doing for a living? And I said, yeah. And he says, well, he says, we've got a job open in Fairbanks at the Geophysical Institute.
You might mention this was a fellow you knew. This was a college classmate.
He and Bruce and I had been in a
English 101.
Freshman English 101 class and
at what school?
Oregon State.
Oh.
And the class was kind of interesting because it was mostly GIs with a few
young innocents like me.
Oh, you were in the class?
Oh,
too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
This was what, 46, 47? That's right around there.
So this man remembered you from the class. And sought you out.
I got a letter from him saying this is what kind of a place this is what kind of a job it is, etc. If you're interested, why, write a letter and apply for it.
What did he say about it that was attractive to you?
That the salary was twice what I was making in the Forest Service. And what else?
Did he say, was there anything that he said about the climate or the location that appealed to you?
Well, it was when we moved to Fairbanks, it was called College, because
that's where that house was?
Mm-hmm. Or the house was, that's okay. Where the university was, etc. And I lost my train of thought.
What appealed to you about that? What he said about the location?
Well, I figured that if I could move someplace where I was making twice as much money, it couldn't be all bad.
That's
fine.
Well, the job in Oregon was pretty much a dead end. He wasn't a forester with the Forest Service, so
You work for the Forest Service, you better be a graduate forester or not work for them.
No.
And we lived in a area where the visitors to the forest, such as congressional people showing up that wanted to see what happened in the Forest Service. And
so you were sort of under the watchful eye?
Well, there were these people kept showing up on practically no notice, and were told, show them around, talk to them, do something, you know. And I woke up to the fact that the regional forester had, for some reason, had a spot on his...
He had chosen that district to send the people to, was that what you're saying?
It was the closest
to Fairbanks,
the closest to
the regional office.
The regional office in Portland. And so any of these official visitors of one kind or another were invariably dumped on that ranger district, on that national forest. There were all for 150, 300 mile radius run, there were all these Forest Service units.
Just for the record, I think you mentioned Bear Springs, but this was Zigzag Ranger District you're really talking about here. It was close to Portland.
And that's where this man came and visited you and suggested that you come to Alaska?
No.
Actually, I think we were in Bear Springs at the time that they came through.
I had been transferred to Bear Springs because it was a step up in job title, etc. And what else?
Well, and then we transferred later back to Zigzag for a short period.
Now, when you were living out in the McCall's house, how did you end up here on Herning Road?
Well, that area was building up. For a while, we had a Quonset hut right in back of our house, which was
on College Road.
On College Road.
Uh-huh.
used by a paint contractor. So there were trucks going in and out. And then on the next corner, which would be College Road and Hayes, somebody had put in a drive-in. And in the summertime...
Oh, like a summer drive-in?
Yeah, a restaurant drive-in type of thing. And in the summertime, I don't care how tight you closed your house up, you could hear their jukebox.
It drove you out of town, huh?
So at that point, we decided, boy, we got to find someplace else. And I think we wanted to get off the off of College Road.
It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and my wife boots me in the bottom, and I'm trying to figure out what's wrong. There's a kid that's sick, or what's going on? And I wake up enough to see that she's trying to communicate with me, and she's saying, "You hear that?" And I'm trying to figure out, there's a kid sick around here someplace. Where is it? And I finally wake up to the fact that what she's talking about is this jukebox, plus it must have been very close to the 4th of July because there were fireworks being shot off, and she says, "Let's get out of this place."
All right, well,
that started the search.
And also, we had looked into buying this place because it was for sale.
Did you find it through the advertisement in the paper?
No. I suppose in talking to Mary Ann or communicating with her, she must have offered it or something.
Mary Ann?
McCall.
Oh.
But in any case, we decided it wasn't worth the cost she was asking for it, the price she was asking for.
For this house?
No.
Oh, for the one in town.
For the one in town.
Oh, okay.
So we decided, we didn't want to buy it.
It was a self-built house that the building supplies came a lot from various and sundry sources of free wood.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that had built the house was...
Nick Item,
the then business manager for... Golden Valley Electric.
Oh, here's the dog team.
And where's that?
Oh, they're the ones that live up above Manny's Field.
Oh, okay. Oh, I've never known where they came from.
Oh, they go down to the flats with the sleds. Mm-hmm. They got some dogs on the back. Yeah.
Yep, right behind the driver.
Okay.
Yeah, back to the story.
And so this house had been built from all kinds of scrap plywood that came from shipping crates that Golden Valley was throwing out in the junk.
Oh, interesting.
And
pretty typical building there at the time. Oh, yeah, and for a long time after.
Mm-hmm. It was a dirt basement.
Coal-fired, cribbed basement.
And
two bedrooms.
There was a chute you could dump into the chute, the coal, mm-hmm. and then the furnace was built with a
stoker,
and
which beat what we had out here
when you first moved down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so what now? Who owned this place before you bought it?
Oh. Fred and Mary Stubbings had homesteaded this place.
Okay.
But they also owned a house that was across College Road and down about 4 places closer to town.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's how we found out about this place, probably just in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's after we had looked at a lot of for something closer.
In fact, we even had looked at this and he had turned our offer down because... what he was trying to do was sell the place, which was the house and a OC3 tractor and 158 acres of ground and what else?
Oh, a couple of small things, but the old Model T.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Wow.
And
what year was this bought it?
We somehow came back to him.
I don't even remember that.
That was 58.
In the fall, spring, summer?
He had been on the market for some time, and he finally took it off the market, and we found out that what it was and what it was the asking price, etc. And we came back at him and made an offer, and he finally accepted it.
And what was the offer he accepted?
Oh, we had...
You wouldn't believe it.
For $10,000, we got the house, which was that log
cabin.
Mm-hmm. And an Oliver OC3.
Crawler tractor. A chainsaw that never did work, I think.
Right. Now, why some of these were put on the...
as part of the deal.
You probably didn't want to have to haul them away.
Well,
and the old Model T, which did not run, as far as I know, but it was kind of an interesting relic.
And how many acres?
158.36 acres.
And that is because the place is located on the township line. The road out here is the township line.
Oh, so...
And which is where they make up for the fact that the world is round instead of square.
Uh-huh.
So this were an acre plus short of having the full
160. Oh, because the entire length of the road has absorbed several acres.
The curvature. Mm-hmm.
You've got 40s, which means 40 acres, which means that this has to be handled somehow in the curvature of the earth.
That's what I understand from the survey.
And so the first two so-called 40s are not 40s. They're what are known as government lots, L-O-T-S.
Oh.
And then going this direction,
because this is an L-shaped piece
down there that aren't affected by that. And so we have two 40s and two government lots.
Oh, interesting.
Trying to make up 160 acres and falling short because of that curvature.
Now, who was here when you moved out?
The neighbors. Yeah. Okay. Well, only we came in, of course, at the top of where the cut is now. So the first neighbor would have been the Everarts, although we didn't go directly by their house. Then the Lyles, and then there was this place on beyond us, another quarter of a mile or so was Harold and Beatrice earning. And a mile off to the east was the Severs, and they had been there less than a year, I think, but they were there over the winter before we moved out in August.
So you were the last people to move into this neighborhood?
Of that group, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And who of the neighbors did you meet first, and what was that like?
Oh, that's a ways back. I can't tell you who we met first or how quite.
What are your first memories of the neighbors that you met here?
Nothing comes to mind particularly. They were always all very helpful. That sort of thing. But I don't have any early recollections of, meeting anyone for the first time. George and Harold, between the two of them, pretty much took care of our road, what road there was. And, of course, at that time, the township road, as we know it, Turning Road, wasn't there. The clearing was there because it was the line. But
what equipment did they have for that purpose?
Just George's tractor, and then in case
tractor
of...
early
on, he just had the tractor with a blade on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have noted various places in my diaries that we'd have a big snowstorm or something, and Harold would come up with a D6 cap that he'd borrowed from somebody. But we had a grader later that I think about four of us went together and bought, this was what they called a pony grader, isn't that right?
Right.
To hauled behind a tractor,
mm-hmm.
and it was purchased from FE Company.
Mm-hmm.
And George pulled it with his little tractor, mm-hmm. which wasn't really big enough for the mm-hmm. grader. I mean, it was a struggle. Mm-hmm. And then somebody had to ride on the grader and control the mm-hmm. blade.
Mm-hmm.
But that kept our road in drivable shape for, well, until the pipeline and mm-hmm. The road highway construction, I guess, is when we finally got the township road, Herning Road in.
Mm. Now, did you have running water when you lived in?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. That yeah. was a rarity.
We had running water. We had electricity. The bathroom wasn't in. The room was there. There was a cesspool,
mm-hmm.
and it was plumbed into the bathroom, but they'd never gotten the fixtures in.
Mm-hmm. So there was still, you were using an outhouse when you first got
Very
there.
Briefly, because we got mm-hmm. the bathroom in before winter.
Was that a stipulation
you bet.
On your part?
You bet. I think we still had a kid in diapers at that point,
uh-huh.
and even if we hadn't, that would have been important. Yeah. Yeah, the Stubbings hadn't lived here full time. They lived here enough to fulfill the homestead requirements.
Mm-hmm.